Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So imagine you are the CEO of Colonial Pipeline, Joseph Blount, and you get ready to go to work one morning, and then your guy calls you, the tech guy, and says, hey, listen, we've got a thing. The alarms are sounding. There's a problem with the pipeline, 29,000 miles of pipeline going from the coast up the Northeast Corridor, providing much of the energy for much of the country, and we've got a problem here. That's how your morning starts. And by that evening, you have not only discovered the scope of the problem, but have agreed to pay $4 million in ransom. What a day. And you know you're not supposed to pay the ransom, but you're worried that if you don't, it could get worse. The story in the Wall Street Journal this week talked a little bit about that. It took Colonial about an hour to shut the conduit, which has about 260 delivery points across 13 states. The move was also meant to prevent the infection from potentially migrating to the pipeline's operational controls. They didn't know how bad it would be or how far it would go, but they knew they had to shut it down. They did, and then they had to pay the ransom. Last time this came up, we talked to Bill Bernard, who is a guy who talks not about pipelines so much, but about hacks. He's the Senior Director of Solutions Architecture at DeepWatch.com. It's an Aurora company, and they're sort of these cyber guys. Welcome back to the show, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you this morning?
Good. I suppose you saw that story. What was your takeaway from that? I'm going to ultimately ask you again if they made the right call in paying the ransom, but what did you think about their decision process there?
Well, I think there's some great news there actually buried in. So you hit the nail on the head about a couple of things. Number one, they made sure that the pipeline itself was safe. And the best way for them to do that, right, the less bad solution was to shut the whole thing down. And, you know, we think about the impact that having shut that down has. Imagine if, you know, somebody from that ransomware group suddenly was able to turn pumps on and off, right, or open valves or whatever else, what could the real-world effects have been, especially with, you know, a fluid like gasoline or jet fuel or diesel, the stuff that goes through their pipeline. So I think, you know, there's some great things as we read in between the lines, finding that the infection was only sort of the business systems. Everybody talks about the billing system specifically, but that fortunately that operational technology, the stuff that we call critical infrastructure that the Department of Homeland Security worries about and all of that, seems like none of that was affected. So that's great news. You know, they reacted very, very quickly, it sounds like, and that's, you know, that's impressive as well. Glad to see that kind of a time frame. The thing that that makes me a little bit more sad about it, I guess I would say, is if the infection of things like their billing system were caused to then have to shut down the rest of the pipeline, maybe there's an opportunity to think about the security of those systems a little bit more and spend a little bit more effort and manpower on those sorts of things. Because if something as innocuous as a business system can shut that pipeline down, then maybe we shouldn't think of that business system as being so innocuous after all.
Yeah, I think it's a level of security that we all, it's like alarms for your house. Everybody gets a security system after they get robbed. This sounds like a commercial for one of those security systems, but it is the truth, isn't it? You would think, though, that a pipeline or, you know, a major American corporation would not be so penny-wise, so pound-foolish. So they shut the thing down because you said that was smart, because maybe these people that hacked into the system could have controlled valves, could have turned pipes on and off. Can they really do that? Do you imagine that somebody in Russia can actually, with their computer, open up a pipeline valve and have fuel flow where it shouldn't? Is the system that able to do that?
So by design, there's rules in place, there's requirements from the government that technically the things that control those systems should not be on the internet in any way, shape, or form. right? There's the good folks at NERC and at FERC, right? Some of the federal agencies, and forgive me the exact acronyms. I always forget a couple of the letters, which you know what the names are.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of regulation and controls around how you are supposed to do that. Now the problem is, sometimes there's we've got this just sort of one entry point into that so that we can control it from these systems or so that the billing system can get information from those systems. And at that point, you start to be very, very concerned that, well, gee, we thought we weren't going to be able to get hit with a ransomware attack like this anyway. Did we forget something else? Did we miss something else? And so you make that decision to take that drastic measure to turn things off. I mean, in terms of controlling that sort of stuff remotely, in my own house, I have a lot of automation for opening the garage door, turning on and off the lights, things like that,
mm-hmm.
which I can actually control from my phone wherever I am in the world. So, in terms of can it happen, not that far-fetched. In terms of can it happen on that critical infrastructure, boy, I hope not. And I hope that, we're taking the proper precautions.
So do you think other businesses are that vulnerable? And is it possible, say, I'm thinking of Sony, instead of just getting incriminating information about people or embarrassing information about people, could they have deleted films, that are digitally stored or something like that? I'm just trying to think of other ways that rather than just grabbing data, a hacker could manipulate your business per se,
Yes. I mean, the good news is that in general, the bad guys are usually, right, the black hat hackers, as we call them, are usually focused on trying to make some money. And so, does deleting Sony's movies
give
me an opportunity to make money, or does holding them ransom do that, right?
Yeah, right. If you delete the movies, then what do I care? I'm not going to give you any money. The movies are gone, yeah.
Right. Things along those lines. Plus, one of the most important security controls that we have in place fairly universally is backup systems, right? So the data was deleted. There's a place to go restore it from. Usually most corporations, most companies over, put a finger in the air, call it 200 people, something like that, have a way to get data back. The problem, of course, is that takes time. And that's one of the problems with these ransomware attacks is, sure, I could probably restore a lot of that data, but that's going to take a long time. Is it faster for me to pay that ransom and get help getting my data back, so to speak, by decrypting it? Would that be faster than me having to get it all back from tape in some instances or online, things like that?
Well, Bill, am I still vulnerable? Are our listeners still vulnerable to this sort of thing on a personal level because of the Target hack from a few years ago or some of the other big ones?
Unfortunately, we're all still vulnerable to lots of different things. At a personal level, a you and me kind of a level, it's probably less about things like ransomware, because at the end of the day, I don't know that I could scrape together $4.5 million to get, copies of my tax returns back from my, from my NAS or something, right? I don't have that. But what I do have is I have an identity. I have an identity I can use for healthcare. I have an identity I can use for other things. My identity can be used for credit. Those are the things that they seem to go after us individuals for, less so the sorts of things they're going after the companies for.
Well, what do you think about the IDES then scam, where people, because they're getting unemployment benefits more than ever and that supplement, are now the objects of identity theft? What is the state doing right or wrong about that?
This is another one of those things where the state kind of got caught with a system that was state of the art at some point and isn't anymore. Unfortunately, one of the truisms of information security, just like, the analogy of a castle and protecting, from attackers with bows and arrows, the bad guys keep changing tactic. They keep getting more sophisticated. And the funny thing is, it's simpler to be more sophisticated. There's a whole ecosystem out there where I can sell you as a bad guy. I can sell you the part that I do well, and then you can use that with whatever you do well. And now you're in. And there's sort of now, corporate communication with these folks.
With the bad guys, even though it's kind of ad hoc. Mm-hmm. But so I'm just thinking about whoever it is. Do you think it's one person? The thing that's happening in Springfield or the state of Illinois, the IDES, identity theft story, do you think that's one person? Is it a coordinated group of people? Do you think we'll ever catch them?
I don't have high hopes that we'll catch them. I would assume that it's more than one person, because again, it's one of those things where, you know, as an individual, even on the information security side of it, there are certain things that I might be very, very good with. I might be a whiz with firewalls, and I might be even a whiz with EDR tools, but I'm not necessarily very good with authentication, and it takes a village to make all of that work, and it usually takes more than one to dismantle it to the level that we're seeing with, you know, things like IDES.
Do you think the IDES thing is local, or is it overseas somehow?
That is a great question. If it is local, we have a much better chance of catching them, right? Because, you know, fortunately, the FBI and other groups have the ability to, you know, potentially track this down and identify folks, which is why so much of this is happening overseas, because the FBI, oddly enough, doesn't have jurisdiction in, you know, certain countries, and we don't get a lot of cooperation, it seems, on this front either. So best I can say is our chances of catching them are much higher if they're here in the U.S., but I wouldn't go betting a lot on that.
You work with businesses around the country, I guess, huh? Small and large?
Yes, we do, from the Fortune 500 on down.
Bill Bernard is a Senior Director of Solutions Architecture at DeepWatch.com. They're based out of Aurora. Nice to talk to you, Bill. We always appreciate your insight.
Always happy to do it, John. Take care.